You're listening to the Fantasy Football Astronauts.
Welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Football Astronauts. This is Jetpack Galileo, and joining me today is Jay Moyer. And we're excited to have finally made it through the first 4 weeks of the season and have an idea of what is actually going on in the NFL. And there might be some confusion now with everything that's happening with COVID and all that, and hopefully we do end up having a full season. But don't necessarily need to worry about that right just yet. Instead, we talk about trends and what we've seen the first 4 weeks of really looking more like preseason games as we figure out what the rest of the season will look like. So, Jay, do you have anybody who's stood out to you in a surprising way?
Well, first of all, I'm excited to be here. I think it's going to be more of a regular thing from here on out, now that I'm officially part of the astronaut crew. Excited to be a part of the crew. I think we have some really exciting things going on, you know, getting into the season. In past years, you're right, we've seen the first four games sort of act as preseason games, and then trends start to become a little more etched in stone. You know, teams get used to who's producing, understand roles a little bit more, players get more familiar with the system. You know, especially huge this year with the atypical offseason, you know, no in-person activities up until training camp, fewer padded practices in training camp, no preseason games. So, you know, we may even take longer to hit a real stride here, but I think we have some good things to talk about from these first 4 weeks. You know, as far as things that that have surprised, I think a good place to start is with the quarterbacks. No one, I don't think, has surprised more impressively than Josh Allen. I mean, the guy, you know, the Bills are running over teams. Josh Allen is leading an offense that is essentially one of the most pass-heavy offenses in the NFL. In neutral situations, they're passing, you know, I think they're second in the league in terms of pass rate, which is very different than what we've seen in them in the past, where they were much more of a running and defense team. Josh Allen seems to have taken a huge step forward. So, I mean, I think it'd be worthwhile to talk about him and what we're seeing in his game specifically that's gotten him to this next level.
Yeah, it's totally been a radical change. And I think, you know, for me, just in my evaluation of Josh Allen, I thought he was going to be coming out of school and out of Wyoming, and he had never had a 70% completion rating, or maybe it was over 60% completion rating. It was just terrible accuracy just throughout his entire career. And then, you know, we hadn't seen it the first few years, and then now all of a sudden he's clicking. And I think it says a lot just about his resilience and the way that he sees and understands the game. He's fearless with what he wants to do, and he doesn't let mistakes get in the way. And I think that that has been a huge part of his development. And as he's had receivers with Diggs coming in and John Brown still clicking with him and still having good chemistry there, and Cole Beasley coming on as far as, you know, able to carry the volume, he's got enough guys there that are reliable, that he can move confidently and make decisions well and continue to play without fear. And I think that's been a huge part of his development.
Yeah, a few things that I've noticed with Allen. You know, the most important thing, and you touched on this, is really that he is a competitive, tough SOB. And I think, you know, it's really something that's a little bit overlooked in player evaluation is toughness, competitive toughness.
Yeah.
You know, and watching Allen, you know, you see the highlight last year where he runs a quarterback sneak and he fumbles the snap, picks it back up. You know, runs over three or four dudes, gets the first down, is all fired up, signals first down. Everyone always talks about, oh, you think this stuff makes a difference in the NFL. They're all NFL players. They're all competitive. And you know what? It's a bit ridiculous because not everybody has that level of competitiveness. And, you know, when you talk about guys who go to the NFL, they're not going to the NFL because they're absolutely the most competitive guys. They're going to the NFL because they meet the athletic requirements of the NFL. If you are big enough and fast enough, you're going to get a shot in the NFL. And just like any level of football, on all teams, you have a spectrum of competitiveness. Yes, is the average NFL player more competitive than your high school teams? Of course. But, you know, on NFL teams, there's a spectrum. And you have guys like Josh Allen who are going to do every single thing that they can do to get that first down. And, you know, you pair that with he has amnesia. When he makes mistakes, it doesn't get him down. And he's made a lot of mistakes, you know, fumbles, ugly interceptions. In the playoff game last year, the dude throws a Hail Mary to a fullback who's in double coverage in overtime. You know, some quarterbacks would let this affect them and they go into a shell and they never recover from that. Josh Allen, it's like water off a duck's back. So when you have that toughness, you have that selective amnesia, you know, you're already ahead of the game there. And it's allowed him to really improve. The other thing that has benefited him is, you know, his organization is fully committed to him. He has a very good coaching staff, an organization that has allowed that coaching staff to be there, and they've had success, you know, because of their defense and running game while he's developed, and they let him develop. And it's very rare in the NFL to see someone who struggles at the quarterback position really continue to get chance after chance after chance. And so that has benefited Josh Allen as well. And then, you know, one thing with accuracy, I think that is somewhat overlooked is it's, yes, part of it is a physical skill and, you know, mechanics and all the footwork and everything that goes into that. But it's really hard to be accurate and throw with confidence when you're not reading the field well and when you're not, you know, fully comfortable in the offense. I think you see this with a guy like Dwayne Haskins in Washington. You know, he was not the most accurate passer in college, but he's much more inaccurate in the NFL than he was at Ohio State when he was lighting up defenses. And I think a big part of that is he's, you know, hasn't had a consistent coaching staff. He hasn't had a staff that is really committed to him. He hasn't been given the chance to get really comfortable in an offense. And with Haskins, the thing that he does best, the best part of his game is really that processing. So if he doesn't have that, you know, he's not a guy like Kyler Murray who can improvise and run around and figure things out, buy himself time, and make plays other ways. You know, if he doesn't have everything in sync, it's not going to happen. And so with Josh Allen, I think a lot of his accuracy issues, you know, his baseline accuracy is not elite, came down to the fact that he didn't see the field well at Wyoming. He didn't see the field well his first 2 years. You know, he misses open guys. He's slow. He sticks on receivers going through progressions. He's really taken a leap this year. You know, in Brian Daboll's offense, likely, I think, because of his comfortability, his familiarness with the scheme, you know, them putting in a scheme that matches his talents to where he's making second, third reads on time, you know, working through progressions, hitting receivers really perfectly in terms of how you draw it up from, you know, quarterbacking mental standpoint. And we haven't seen that with him at all in the past 2 years. So I think that really, you know, Josh Allen, what I've seen so far is very, very encouraging. I think that if he continues that, you know, the stuff that he's doing now is here to stay, and he's going to be an exciting player one way or the other going forward. So great stuff from Josh Allen.
Yeah. If you look at, so his first two seasons, both of them are under 60% completion percentage. He's got 2,000 yards passing in his first season, 3,000 yards passing in his second season. And now in his third year, he's on pace for 5,300 passing yards. He's got 12 touchdowns right now. He's on pace for 48 touchdowns and 4 interceptions.
It's ridiculous. I've never seen anything. I've never seen anything like this in terms of taking such a leap as a passer. Now, from a fantasy perspective, Josh Allen has always been good because he gets the rushing production and he runs in a ton of touchdowns. So he's always been solid. But you know, couple that now with elite passing production. And I mean, you know, he's in the conversation with Pat Mahomes and Lamar Jackson for like your dynasty quarterback one. So it's remarkable. It's remarkable.
It's crazy. It's amazing. So one comp that sticks out to people in terms of fantasy value and what we're seeing with Josh Allen is people are saying, okay, before we were kind of making jokes that this is white Cam Newton, but now from like that's where we're at in terms of, you know, is this guy a Cam Newton type guy where he can be top three consistently for a few years in a row? Do you see that with Josh Allen moving forward? Do you think that he's, you know, won over the franchise and won over the team, not just in terms of his leadership or even his rushing ability, but in terms of how they want to give him volume and how they trust him? Do you think that that's going to continue throughout the rest of the season?
Yeah, for me, in terms of consistency and repeatability for quarterbacks, the key is seeing them make difficult plays as a passer. And these are intermediate routes that are on time where you have to work through, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 guys in a progression, and you get to that third, fourth receiver on time and make an accurate pass. I've seen it a few times this year. Seth Galina on Twitter, you know, of Pro Football Focus, posted a breakdown this week, really detailing several plays Allen made against the Raiders where it was really just elite quarterbacking, you know, in terms of working the pocket, going through progressions, finding open receivers on time who are deep in the progression. So I think it's here to stay. You know, Stephon Diggs, one of the best receivers in the NFL, seems to have helped Allen a ton. He's not going anywhere. John Brown is a great number two. I think everything's set up. They have a good offensive line. Everything's set up for Allen, and he's really taking advantage.
Love it. So the next young guy I wanted to get to is Kyler Murray and his development. And I think, you know, you put out a video where you had some questions on Kyler Murray's overall processing and how he's really seeing the field versus what is he doing in terms of relying on his athleticism. From a fantasy standpoint, he's been pretty solid. 25.8 fantasy points per game is excellent. His rushing production has increased a lot from last season in terms of pace. So last season he was 544 yards rushing and 4 touchdowns. He's already got 4 touchdowns this season. So early on, he's showing that on the ground he can win games, not just for your fantasy team, but in real life. But through the air, he's had some struggles with only 7 passing touchdowns and 5 interceptions. What are your thoughts on Kyler Murray and how he's developing in his second year?
Yeah, so Kyler is sort of the opposite of Josh Allen in that he really is showing, in my opinion, I don't see him having progressed at all from what we saw as a rookie. I think that he's the same exact guy. And that, you know, in a lot of ways is a very useful playmaker in the NFL and for fantasy, especially, as you mentioned, relating to what he's doing on the ground. Cliff Kingsbury has a very creative running game that involves Murray and then also his ability to scramble. I didn't mention this about Josh Allen, but it's another strength of his is pocket awareness. And so I think Kyler, you know, that's also a strength that he shares. He's very aware of where rushers are coming from. And with his athleticism and his scrambling ability, he's able to capitalize and pick up a lot of yards that way. And that's something that really helps those young quarterbacks as they're developing the mental side that Josh Allen eventually did. I'm not seeing that from Kyler yet, though. And specifically, you know, the things I look for, again, getting back to going through progressions, working reads down the field, Arizona's passing game has been a huge, you know, hugely composed of design throws, like wide receiver screens, you know, running back screens, what we call scheme throws, where there's no reading going on. The quarterback drops back. He's throwing it to DeAndre Hopkins, you know, out in the flat, hoping that he can pick up 6, 7, 8 yards. And it's a way that NFL coaches, you know, use the passing game as the running game. So a lot of his attempts are of that variety. And really that is either because that's just what Kingsbury wants to do, or in my opinion, I think it's because Kingsbury doesn't necessarily feel comfortable having Kyler drop back, you know, read through a progression, attack downfield. He's a great downfield passer, but he gets stuck on his first read a lot of the time. He'll stare down receivers. He won't necessarily see zone defenders who are coming in, you know, as receivers cross zone. So he's, you know, risk turnovers in that sense. He's had a couple bad interceptions this year where he really stared down a receiver going across the middle, you know, didn't see a safety who had dropped into a deep zone, puts it up anyway, and, you know, easy interception for the safety. So I would really like to see him progress on the mental side of things, processing, understanding the scheme, you know, before he can really step into that elite tier of NFL quarterbacks. The good news is, you know, like I said, you know, he has a lot of talents, both as a natural passer and as a runner, to where while he's developing that, he can still be a functional player, still win some games, and be a very valuable fantasy player.
Yeah, he'll be interesting to see just in terms of his development with DeAndre Hopkins as they move forward. I think it might be a year three kind of thing where we saw with Josh Allen. So I'm kind of hoping for that. I think in terms of fantasy value, he'll always be there. The thing that stuck out to me was Detroit and Carolina are smash matchups, right? You know, or you're expecting him to totally blow up. And he was just kind of he just kind of performed to expectation, right? 20-point games are good games, but it felt like there was so much potential for more. And even against the Panthers, they ended up losing. So definitely more room for growth there. One guy that some people were a fan of just in terms of like their overall potential was Daniel Jones. And thinking or looking at some of his stats from last year, 3,000 passing yards in just 12 games. That's pretty intriguing. 24 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. Now he's like regressed, it seems. 2 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He's gone from 16.5 fantasy points per game to now 10.8. What's the deal with Daniel Jones? How much of it is related to the first four teams that he's played? The Steelers, Bears, Niners and Rams all have pretty solid defenses. Do you relate it to that, or is something else going on in terms of the way that Daniel Jones is not developing and not taking the next step?
Well, there are no excuses in the NFL. You got to produce no matter who you're playing against. And I think with Daniel Jones, you know, he's someone that I looked at in depth this offseason over for Matt Waldman at mattwaldmanrsp.com, wrote an article on him with some video breakdowns. You know, before I joined up with Astronauts, and I think last year their scheme really hid a lot of his deficits. Pat Shurmur is someone who's had a lot of success with quarterbacks who are really, you know, middle to bottom of the road quarterbacks. You think about guys like Case Keenum, Sam Bradford, Mark Sanchez. He's been able to scheme those guys to success in terms of, you know, producing career years and putting up respectable numbers. And I think it was the same thing with Daniel Jones last year. The things that really concerned me about Jones were, you know, I guess a consistent theme with these three guys early in their careers is just the ability to process the field, get through progressions, make reads, and avoid, you know, turnover-worthy throws as they're called by Pro Football Focus. And you saw a lot of times Jones really staring down his first read. And if he would get deeper in his progressions, sort of throw up very reckless passes without checking or understanding where the defenders would be. And, you know, you see a lot of that same stuff this year. And then couple that in with something that he does not have that both Allen and Murray do, which is that pocket awareness. Daniel Jones is extremely oblivious in the pocket. And so, you know, he led the league in fumbles last year, despite not playing all 16 games. And, you know, the reason for that is because he does not feel the blindside rush at all. And it really catches him off guard. He has no internal clock in terms of understanding how long he can stand back there. And you couple that with an offensive line in New York, you know, that really has not done a great job of protecting him. So it's sort of the perfect storm for struggles in terms of losing a great offensive coordinator, being a guy who struggles to see the field, and then also playing behind a bad offensive line and not being able to feel the rush.
Yeah, I remember watching Daniel Jones and thinking, like, does this guy – either this guy is really gutsy or he has no clue what's going on in terms of just the way that he was feeling the pocket around him, where, you know, you get the rusher right by him and he wouldn't even move really. But he'd still make the throw. And now it just seems like he's just getting blown up all the time. So, yeah. Anything else you want to add to Daniel Jones before we head to our last quarterback?
I mean, I do think that he is very gutsy, but sometimes that's a problem for me quarterback,
right?
Because, you know, he's taking these huge hits and he's throwing the ball as he's getting hit, very cavalier with the football, both throwing and just holding on to it. And so, you know, in the NFL, turnovers are huge. You know, can't really do it as a starting quarterback, so maybe be a little less brave.
Yeah. Well, in talking about Cavalier quarterbacks, Carson Wentz is definitely among those. He's thrown 42 interceptions so far in his career. And right now he's thrown 7 interceptions to 4 touchdowns. It's been an abysmal season for the Eagles so far. So much hope heading into the year as far as, okay, now we finally got Wentz weapons. We invested in Jalen Reagor, and Jalen Reagor is going to be a big deal because he had a really good dominator rating and all this other stuff. But, as far as what we're seeing from Carson Wentz, everyone is saying this guy has regressed. Tell us about, like, how is he going to turn it around? Do you see that as a potential possibility? Or is this kind of the end where we end up saying, okay, in year 5, to step back like this, we got to definitely pump the brakes and take a look at least investing in other fantasy options?
Yeah, so Wentz, you know, it's really a tough situation where you have a guy who's really produced well with great surroundings, you know, great circumstance in terms of always having, you know, multiple positions on the offensive line, all pro caliber players, including, you know, Jason Peters, who now is still with the team, but is well past his prime. You know, center, Jason Kelsey, right tackle, Lane Johnson. They lost their all pro right guard, Brandon Brooks this year to an Achilles injury. But, you know, we're talking 4 out of 5 spots where this guy's had all pro caliber players for essentially his entire career. And then they've had good players at the receiver spots when healthy, but the past 2 years you've seen just terrible. I mean, you know, maybe it's luck, maybe it's the medical staff, who knows? But these receivers every year are dropping like flies. And I don't know, when you have, you know, DeSean Jackson is one of your receivers and Alshon Jeffrey is one of your receivers, maybe you're sort of asking for those types of outcomes. But really, they have no reliable weapons on the outside. You know, he's throwing to a different receiver group each week. Their offensive line is not nearly as good as it has been. They don't have a very good running back. you know, I laugh because my history with Miles Sanders is well documented. And, you know, I think he's a league average running back at this point. They have a couple good tight ends, but even Dallas Goedert now, you know, broke a bone in his ankle. So nothing has gone right for the Eagles. And Carson Wentz is not a guy like Patrick Mahomes, you know, like the Tom Brady's, Drew Brees, that we've seen in the past, that regardless of circumstance are good enough to get the job done. I've always thought that he's sort of a context-dependent quarterback, so not quite in that elite tier. His production has led people to think that he's in that elite tier, but a couple of big issues for him are, one, his footwork in the pocket is very loud. You know, he doesn't have controlled footwork, so when he gets pressure in tight spaces, he has trouble navigating the pocket and making throws. You know, Tom Brady is probably the best at this in terms of picturing someone I'm talking about. Just being able to, you know, use controlled footwork to make slight movements, avoid, you know, glancing pressure, step up in the pocket and make throws. That's not Carson Wentz. He's very dramatic with his movements, breaks the pocket a lot, but can't quite get the subtle footwork down. And then he's never been a very accurate passer. You know, he's more of an area thrower. He doesn't have the wildly crazy throws that you see like Josh Allen his first couple years would make, but his passes tend to be in the area of the receiver rather than right on target. And so, you know, when you don't have the surrounding skill talent or line talent, those two problems are really magnified and, you know, it's come back to bite them. And I don't know that it's necessarily that he's regressed as much as just his surroundings are not what they have been. And it's exposing, you know, it's really magnifying his weaknesses.
Wow. That's harsh. So are you moving on from Carson Wentz? If you have him, are you trying to get rid of him?
I mean, I think Doug Peterson is a great coach. I have a lot of faith in that organization. As long as he's a quarterback of the Eagles, I think he has a shot. You know, my concern is that they think that he's regressed and he's not as good because of all the things that have happened in the surroundings, and they end up moving on from him. But, you know, he's in the tier of quarterbacks where if I was an NFL team, I wouldn't be too excited about giving them a huge mega deal for a quarterback. You know, they've already locked him up and given him his extension. So we're sort of past that point. But yeah, I mean, it does make me hesitant from a fantasy perspective, because I think with this contract and, you know, the injuries we've seen and the aging of the offensive line, it's a long road to recovery in terms of getting back to where he was his first few years in the league.
Sadness. Well, let's move on to running backs. So we're going to go rapid fire running backs here. We're just, more than anything, spotting trends and trying to identify talent. Some young names who are coming in and showing us that maybe running backs don't matter. Let's start with James Robinson of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now, he is RB6 and just right out the gate kicked Leonard Fournette off the team, basically. They have been huge fans of him and have trusted him with just massive amounts of volume. He's got 60 carries on the season. And he's receiving 15 targets, so decent enough, but he's producing there with 161 receiving yards. So is James Robinson the real deal?
There's a lot to like about James Robinson, starting with being able to land a hurdle.
Yes.
This is a very important skill when we're talking about elite playmakers in the NFL.
I'm so glad you picked up on that.
I mean, Brandon Ayuk, we saw it this past week. That was just ridiculous. Yeah. James Robinson had a similar, you know, highlight-worthy hurdle where he's jumping over a defender who's on his feet, lands it, and keeps going. So that's huge. No, but, you know, in terms of getting to the substance of his game, and, you know, I love watching my running backs. James Robinson is advanced beyond his years in terms of his vision, his footwork, his understanding of run schemes. He makes great decisions. That's a very important component of running back play for consistency. You know, being able to gain yards when the blocking isn't perfect. Those things are really key. And then he has great contact balance, and he's very elusive. So he makes a lot of guys miss, and he breaks a lot of tackles and picks up extra yards. And so undrafted guy, ran a 4.6. Very rare that these guys get a shot, that they're even on a team that's willing to entertain, you know, putting them in the starting lineup. He got a shot. He's earned it. He really has a lot of very important, you know, fundamental positives in his game. And so if he continues to be the man in Jacksonville, you know, he's good enough to be a very consistent and productive runner in the NFL. And the fact that they were willing to trade Fournette or release Fournette, I don't know. I think they released him. You know, speaks volumes to how much faith they have in Robinson. And you hear on the broadcast, Jay Gruden, you know, in their interviews they have had where he talks about how Robinson, you know, was in the playbook from day one. When he stepped in, he knew all the protection schemes, you know, was excellent in pass blocking. And so it's very rare for a rookie to be able to do that. He's produced. So I think that they will, you know, ride with him, even though he's an undrafted free agent. And you worry about them always trying to find the next guy, as you've seen with Philip Lindsay, another very excellent undrafted free agent runner out in Denver. But I think Robinson's the real deal.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, as soon as he's landing that hurdle, you know, this guy is for real. It's automatic waiver wire pickup. You can spend 50% of your fab on this guy and you would have knocked it out of the park. It would have been a great pickup, and it's as simple as just identifying, okay, does he have the ability to jump over somebody? But yes, James Robinson, huge fan of what he's doing and what they're believing in him. And I don't think, you know, some people are saying, okay, he's a UDFA and he ran a 4.6, so that's upsetting. Just sell him because his value is as high as it's ever going to be. But it sounds like you are not in that camp, and that is exciting. Looking at Aaron Jones. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, they post the screenshot of, what is it called? Breakout Finder or Player Profiler. The Player Profiler screenshot of his 4.6 40, and it's like, sell now. Look, man, 4.6 40 is almost meaningless for running backs in the NFL. It's plenty fast enough. You've had a lot of flameouts who run 4.3s, a lot of good players who run 4.6s. Ignore that. People were probably laughing about this hurdle thing. It's fail safe, man. Look at Kalen Ballage. Did you guys see Kalen Ballage try to hurdle a guy? I think it was against what? The Cowboys? No, they haven't played the Jets. Who was this against?
I forget. I know what you're talking about, though.
I mean, the defender's 5 yards away. Kalen Ballage tries to hurdle him, ends up getting a helmet to the crotch, and then I think it is against the Cowboys because I think Jaylon Smith then. No, it's the Colts. It's Darius Leonard. And then Darius Leonard just cleans his clock, man. It's like, and I mean, Kalen Ballage is one of the worst running backs in recent memory. So, when you think about what he's doing on a hurdle and what James Robinson's doing on a hurdle,
right?
I mean, it's foolproof, man.
Night and day. We'll go to another talented running back, Aaron Jones. So my concern for him was, okay, they're investing the second round pick. He's going to see a decrease in volume. Jamal Williams is back healthy. He's going to steal touches. But I love the guy. I've loved the guy since he was at UTEP. and been a huge fan and was on his bandwagon all last season. I hopped off a little bit, I'm sorry to say, but it looks like Matt LaFleur has not hopped off, and I hope that you hadn't either. But tell me about Aaron Jones. Do you think that we're starting to hear a little bit of coach speak where LaFleur's like, all right, we're going to try to get these guys more involved? Do you buy that at all? Are you in any sort of Aaron Jones concern sell territory? Or are we thinking this is them looking at Rodgers and the way that he's playing and the way that the offense is moving right now, and they're going to keep Aaron Jones humming?
I don't know what to say about the Packers draft because it made no sense.
No.
And, you know, their first two picks are really designed to replace the two best players on their team, essentially, I guess Devontae is excellent in his own right. But two of their three best players on the offensive side in terms of skill position. So what are you doing? You know, Aaron Jones, I guess he's a late round pick. NFL teams are always trying to replace those guys. He's slow. NFL teams are trying to replace slow running backs. You know, slow in terms of timed 40. He plays very fast because he reads the field very well. He has very efficient footwork. You know, it's really elite in terms of his ability to anticipate creases, not waste steps, no wasted motion, and, you know, find any crack, any crevice, and maximize his yardage on any given play. You know, very good at the craft of playing running back, you know, pressing the hole, using blockers to block more than one defender by manipulating angles, manipulating linebackers, etc. You know, he reminds me a lot of Jamal Charles in the way he does that. Jamal Charles did that and ran a 4.3, which is why he's one of the greatest running backs of all time. But Aaron Jones is really an elite back, excellent receiver. You know, it's sort of foolish what they did to try to replace those two guys rather than building around them, but you know, they're good enough to withstand that, and the offense has been humming. I don't see Aaron Jones getting any significant decrease in work, maybe a slight, decrease just to try to keep him as fresh as possible as they work through and try to keep guys healthy for, you know, what's looking like it's going to be a playoff run. But, you know, I'm full steam ahead with Aaron Jones, and I was off him a bit this offseason because I didn't have much faith in their organization. After using a second round pick on AJ Dillon in terms of, you know, giving him the workload he deserves.
Yeah. Well, he's proven us wrong again, 2 years in a row. I think he's proven a lot of people wrong. So very happy for Aaron Jones and what he's doing in the NFL right now. And so the other guy, well, okay. With Aaron Jones, I think one thing that I want to learn, or I think that the message is don't fade talented players because of their situation. Right. If they produced well, or they're elite in some category, or special in some way, and they're with the same coaching staff and all that kind of stuff, don't fade them because of the situation. And I want that to be the message. But I think with Joe Mixon, I'm running into some issues where I do believe he's talented. I do believe that he's got every bit of the ability, but the situation has obviously been terrible. So what are you thinking about Joe Mixon moving forward? More specifically, I think in terms of like his fantasy value, not necessarily like who he is as a player, but what are you going to do with him as he's heading into a slate of Baltimore, Colts? I mean, these are good defensive lines, Baltimore, Colts, and then he's playing Cleveland and Tennessee. So some decent defenses in there, Pittsburgh in week 10. Just right at those next five games, those are going to be tough games for him. So what do you think fantasy value wise, are they finally clicking because he had a big breakout game against the Jags?
Well, you know, when you talk about running backs, what really matters in terms of talent, and I already mentioned it a bit, I think that, you know, in studying these guys as much as I have the past few years, the thing that really lends itself to consistency, regardless of who they're playing, is the craft, the stuff that I talk about with Aaron Jones, you know, understanding schemes, understanding blocking angles, leverage, efficient footwork, not missing opportunities. Joe Mixon is not a refined runner at all. You know, really his weakness as a player is in those areas. What he is an explosive back with good contact balance who has great, you know, lateral agility. He's very elusive, and he's really one of the best open field players in the NFL in terms of being able to make guys miss, pick up yards, you know, explosive accelerator. And the thing that is the Bengals, it's not that they suck, you know, that the offensive line is making holes for him. I mean, that's part of the problem. It's really how they try to use Joe Mixon. If they use Joe Mixon in a rational way, he would produce even though he's on the team. And this is one of the reasons that their team is not good, is because they don't realize what Joe Mixon's good at, and they don't let him do what he's good at. If I were running an offense with Joe Mixon, I would give him maybe 10 to 15 carries a game, try to get him in space on those carries, you know, tosses, outside zone plays, gap style runs, where he's not having to do the refined, you know, vision decision making that, you know, you have to do on inside zone. Duo is a play they run a lot, where you're having to read linebackers, all that stuff. And I would throw him the ball, you know, 7 to 10 times a game, and just try to,
yeah,
just try to get him in space, because what he does is make guys miss and create explosive plays in space. And if you did that, he would be much more consistent in terms of his production. But they're obviously not going to do that. It's been, you know, a year and a quarter of a season with Zach Taylor. They have this idea of him as your two down bell cow. So for me, you know, scheme talent fit, it doesn't really fit. I think Joe Mixon is a very talented player, but he's not talented in the areas that really matter for the way that he's being used.
Heartbreaker. And I mean, we think Zach Taylor is going to be there next year, right? They'd be like, oh, it's your first year with Joe Burrow. Let's give you another year of ruining, ruining our team. I mean, that's got to be the case. So I imagine he sticks around.
I mean, the Bengals are not in the business of paying coaches not to coach.
Right.
So they're going to let Zach Taylor, you know, play out the string on his contract.
Yeah. Oh. Rough. So we might be selling Joe Mixon. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see anyone using him in a sensible manner unless, you know, he were to magically appear on the Patriots or something like that.
All right. Well, there you go. And then the last player, another guy who is a freak athlete, who is developing his craft in some sense, Antonio Gibson has surprised a lot of people. And he's one of those guys where you can just plug in his player profiler and say, well, he's going to be good. And look where we are. Antonio Gibson showing up even on a bad Redskins team, at least some exciting characteristics, a big game with over 100 scrimmage yards against Baltimore last week. What do you see in Antonio Gibson's game in terms of, like, we know all the other stats about his speed score or whatever. Tell us about what you're seeing in his development, how he's reading the run, and all that.
You know what I'm seeing in Antonio Gibson? I'm seeing a player that's very much like Joe Mixon on a team that understands who he is as a player.
Ooh, yeah.
Because, well, first of all, I'm not trying to sell Antonio Gibson short. He's been a surprise to me in terms of how well he's run between the tackles. You know, I think that especially his footwork has been much improved from what we saw at Memphis on the limited amount of work he had. He's been much more efficient than I thought he would be. And, you know, he reads leverage well, so I guess it's not a huge surprise that he would be able to pick that up. But, you know, they get him the ball on, you know, gap-style plays with pullers. They get him the ball in space as a receiver. And really just an explosive guy who knows how to break tackles, makes guys miss in the open field. So, you know, it's sensible use of a player who's really a great open field player.
I love it. Yeah. So one of the things that, I mean, we were talking about Antonio Gibson week one, and he got 9 carries for 36 yards. He had a couple targets. I was like, oh, hey, they're at least getting him involved. That's exciting. And I remember thinking, okay, yeah, this guy's going to figure it out. And it doesn't have to, like, with so many of these guys, for me, in the way that I'm evaluating them, and if they're a great athlete, I don't always think, like, oh, okay, what are they doing in between the tackles? He showed enough to me when he was getting outside of, like, setting up a defender in the second level. And he was able to do that against the Eagles a couple times, and I thought that was enough to say, okay, he's going to get it. It'll click eventually. And I think we're kind of at that point where now we're feeding him 13 carries and 5 targets. Hey, that's as good as anybody else in the league. 18 opportunities is fantastic. I'm very excited for Antonio Gibson moving forward. Does the offensive line concern you at all and all the changes that they're making? Like, rest of the season, how are you evaluating him?
I don't think the offensive line is a big deal because, as I talked about, they really use him in a way that makes sense. And so I think, you know, one of the huge things that I try to look for is just the scheme talent fit. It's something I talked about a lot with, like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You know, something we just touched on with Joe Mixon. It just makes sense what they're doing with him. And so in those settings, the players will maximize production on their opportunity, regardless of the circumstances. You know, whether it's a well-blocked screen pass or one that's just okay, Antonio Gibson is going to maximize his production on those types of plays. So, you know, he'll get enough good looks on plays that really fit him to where he'll be able to produce. I think he's going to be a very good player for that offense going forward. And, you know, really has a chance to evolve with his both run and pass game, you know, involvement, especially in PPR leagues, into an elite running back, you know, top 10 to 12 running back over the next year or two. So I'm pretty excited about him. I think he'll continue to develop because he has a lot of things in his game that are hard to teach. So, yeah, I mean, I think Kyle Allen will, if anything, help because he likes to check down the ball, you know, a lot of short passes, doesn't have much of an arm to challenge teams downfield. We saw that with Christian McCaffrey last year, yes, where, you know, he's leading the league in receptions. So if anything, I think it will help, you know, Gibson's production in the passing game.
Yeah, man, they got it all set up. He's the next Christian McCaffrey. Can't wait. So last season we saw Chris Godwin come out and be kind of out of nowhere, just be an amazing wide receiver one, just like magically. And it just happened because Twitter and everybody in the fantasy world was like, all right, we're going to make Chris Godwin a thing. And then we got a little bit from Bruce Arians to nibble on in the offseason. Well, we're going to give him 100 catches. And that ended up being the case. They just fed Chris Godwin 120 targets. He had a fantastic year last season, finishing as wide receiver two. And now, right now, we have another guy who is not specifically the best wide receiver on his own team, with Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones playing together. And Calvin Ridley has been absolutely destroying in the fantasy realm. So first three games, he was fantastic. And then he threw up a goose egg last night, and he's still wide receiver three overall in the season. Just bonkers as far as how productive he's been. About Calvin Ridley, are you surprised at all, or what do you think about him moving forward? And then can he replace Julio Jones? Is he going to be better than Julio Jones the rest of the year?
Well, what I think about Calvin Ridley and the NFL in general, you know, NFL teams used to throw fades to the X receiver, the receiver on the line. Now, you might as well go ahead and fade the X, you know, because those guys are not getting the ball. You know, look at across the NFL, the big physical receiver who's lining up on the line, having to deal with the best corner on the defense. NFL offenses have decided that those low efficiency targets, those high degree of difficulty targets where a receiver really has to win one-on-one, are very inefficient, and they're not doing it anymore. You know, you look at Julio, you look in Dallas where Michael Gallup is the X. You know, he's getting very little attention from Dak Prescott. You know, Miami, young receiver, a lot of people thought might break out this year. Preston Williams has had back-to-back weeks with three targets, you know, when their team's been forced to pass quite a bit. And so I don't think Calvin Ridley is a better receiver than Julio Jones, even at this stage in both of their careers.
Right.
But what he does is he gets to play the position that's much easier. And, you know, you can create open looks. He's not facing the best corner consistently. And, you know, this is not to sell Calvin Ridley short. He's a very good receiver. Specifically, you know, he has the ability to break in his routes. It's comparable to any receiver in the NFL. He's really excellent getting in and out of his breaks. He's excellent manipulating corners, telling a story with his stem. All these things go into creating separation. He's one of the best separators in the NFL at all levels of the field. You know, he lacks some things of his game. Like, he's not an extremely physical receiver. He's not that good at tracking the ball. You'll see him misjudge the ball occasionally. But, you know, given his role and his ability to create separation, it's enough to where he's going to get a lot of opportunity, and he's good enough to capitalize on the opportunity. So, I mean, I don't see that changing anytime soon. So I'm all in on Ridley.
Gotta love it. Who's next on our list? DJ Moore was a guy that a lot of people were high on, similar to the way that they were high on Calvin Ridley. This guy's going to take the next step. I think last season he finished around wide receiver 12, so he was a wide receiver 1. But this year it has been absolutely abysmal. Robbie Anderson, the guy that I thought was going to be a decoy, he ended up taking everything. DJ Moore is the actual decoy, and Curtis Samuel is a total afterthought. What is going on with the Panthers, and is DJ Moore done for?
Yeah, I think it's an important lesson in understanding receivers from a skill set perspective, and you know what their strengths and weaknesses are and how susceptible they are to changes in, you know, coaching staff, scheme, quarterback personnel. Specifically, what you want to look for in like true wide receiver ones who you don't really have to worry about situation are guys who can win in multiple ways. You know, they can run routes, they can separate, they can make plays when it's contested. They're excellent tracking the ball. You know, you think about guys like Michael Thomas, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, who really just have multiple ways to win. When you're not like that as a receiver, you're somewhat dependent on the circumstances. You know, if Calvin Ridley were to lose Julio Jones for an extended period of time, and they, you know, had time to bring in other receivers around him, the dynamic might change in terms of how defenses are playing them. You know, how many targets he's going to get if now he's the receiver who's facing the difficult targets all the time. With DJ Moore, you know, he's very good. He's elite at a couple things, but there are some holes in his game. And so when he's not extremely versatile in terms of being elite in a lot of different areas, when you change coaching staffs, if they change the way they use him, or if you bring in another receiver who maybe has more talent in a way that that new staff is trying to get, you know, their passing game going, he runs the risk of not being the number one receiver on the team. We've seen that with Robbie Anderson, another player who was able to escape the grasp of Adam Gase. Yes. And show the NFL how good he actually is. You know, it's remarkable the run of players that have left Adam Gase and, you know, turned their careers around.
It's 100%.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Tannehill is just lighting it up. You know?
Everybody.
Kenyon Drake saved his career. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is that I think DJ Moore is very good, and he's elite after the catch. He's a very physical player, you know, elite working over the middle and really finding holes in zone coverage. So I think he's a very good, useful receiver. But if he doesn't have that usage that he had with Kyle Allen last year in Carolina, you know, he's not necessarily a player who's going to demand that kind of attention based on his skill set if the coaching staff and quarterback aren't, you know, specifically trying to do things that way.
Yeah, I'm 100% agree. DJ Moore, not specifically done for, but definitely in the wide receiver 2 category, no longer worth what you were hoping that he was going to be worth in Dynasty. With these Cowboys receivers that we're seeing where everybody is extremely talented, Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, the wide receiver 1 in fantasy right now, finally hitting that Amari Cooper ceiling that we were kind of hoping for his whole career. What are you doing with all these Cowboys? Are they going to keep throwing the ball 50 times a game? It might be the case with how bad the Cowboys defense is. How are you sorting these guys out week to week? Like if I'm looking for a DFS edge, how can I find that in picking one of these Cowboys receivers? What's the answer here?
I mean, one, I think that their volume is going to stay relatively stable. I mean, Dak's gone over 450 yards, I think, or around at least, you know, approaching 450 yards in 3 straight games. Last week he was over 500 passing yards. Mike McCarthy's sole goal as their coach really seems to be to run as many plays as possible. Their situation neutral pace is number one in the NFL by like 4 or 5 seconds per play. So, I mean, they're flying. Gosh.
Wow. Yeah.
they're flying. It's crazy. And you know, Dak was saying that that is really their identity, is just trying to go fast.
Jeez.
Which is crazy because their defense, you know, they've had some injuries. Their defense has been a sieve. They're getting lit up. They're losing all these games. You know, Dak's putting up yards, playing from behind. It's not a great situation for an NFL team. It's a great situation for our fantasy interests. They're feeding Amari. Amari, you know, the way they run their offense, and it gets back to that stuff we talked about earlier, is he's the guy that the plays are really designed for. You know, he gets routes out of the slot. He's off the line of scrimmage. They send him in motion. They create easy situations for Amari, and he's very good. You know, one of the elite route runners and separators in the NFL, getting, you know, 10 to 15 targets a game. So that's enough for him to be wide receiver one. And it's really been that way in all the games. And the thing that marked Amari throughout all these years was really just the consistency. And I think they figured out a way to create enough favorable situations for him consistently to where he can produce. So I expect his volume to continue. And I think he is more than good enough to continue to produce with that volume. Gallup last year saw almost equal to, or I guess essentially equal volume to Cooper. But whether it's McCarthy or what, their offense has really gone away from featuring Gallup in any sense. He's much more of a downfield decoy. You know, he's lined up that X spot on the line of scrimmage, having to beat press coverage, and he's good at it. You know, he can succeed when given the opportunity. He's very good after the catch, but the plays are just not designed to go to Gallup. So he's later in the progression, you know, not a guy they're deciding to feature. And then CeeDee Lamb, you know, very excellent rookie receiver, also is getting a lot of those easier opportunities out of the slot, etc. And, you know, when defenses are having to take away these other guys, we saw last week, you know, he runs a seam route and he's just wide open down the field for a 43-yard touchdown. So very easy opportunities. Again, another receiver who's more than good enough to excel in those opportunities. And then, yeah, I mean, even Dalton Schultz is getting more targets than Michael Gallup. And it's not that Dalton Schultz is anything special as a talent. It's just that those other three guys are getting so much attention that it's really just a situation of being the forgotten man in the defense's eyes and then passing so often that Schultz has really been, you know, a tight end one in the games that he's played. So high volume passing attack, a lot of talent. As far as the DFS edge, you know, it's really hard to predict game to game whether Gallup will have what he had against Seattle, where he really blows up, or what he had last week where he got, you know, 3 receptions for 29 yards in a game where Dak Prescott threw for 500. But Cooper, I expect to be very consistent just because of his role and the volume there.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Yeah, I think maybe choosing the cheaper option between Lamb and Gallup might be a good play, or just always relying on Cooper. Cooper's got 51 targets and they lead the NFL. Michael Gallup is half with 24 targets. And then CeeDee Lamb is really not that far ahead, but you know, with this, you know, 4 games in, you only have so much. But CeeDee Lamb's at 29. CeeDee Lamb's in the Devontae Parker, Tyreek Hill, Julian Edelman, Odell Beckham kind of category of targets, which is surprising. He's getting plenty of looks. Despite Cedric Wilson being there and ruining everything, what was that, like a few weeks ago? So, that's the Cowboys there. And then last guy on our list is Preston Williams. And what are you going to do here with Preston? Are you moving on from him this season? Are you buying in Dynasty? What's the outlook here? Just as far as like him losing snaps, is it related to the knee? Is it related to taking a step back, or has he finally been found out because he's a UDFA?
I mean, I think that they were easing him along with the knee. You know, he's been missing some practices here and there. And then also just his position that he plays, he's, you know, on the line, he's the X receiver. Again, it's not a position that offenses are really featuring in 2020 in the NFL. A lot of the pass game, a lot of the passing offense is designed with Devontae Parker as the first read. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is a quarterback who reads the defense pre-snap and sort of decides where he's going. Doesn't do much after the snap, and that's, you know, one of the reasons he's had so many interceptions throughout his career is that he does not really process the field well and move through progressions well. So what you see is him, you know, feeding a lot of targets regardless of who's really open. It's more just based on, you know, who's favored in the pre-snap. So that's why, you know, Devontae Parker is the guy who gets funneled all the targets. And even, you know, someone like Isaiah Ford, who is not a guy that the Dolphins are designing their offense to feed, and it's not a guy that defenses are really concerned about taking away. But, you know, defenses are happy that Ryan Fitzpatrick throws to Isaiah Ford 10 times, completes four passes for 40-something yards. And, you know, that's the problem with those quarterbacks who do a good job pre-snap, but then just sort of decide that that's where they're going to go is, you know, you see this with Derek Carr all the time, getting sort of schemed into taking checkdowns that really prohibit an efficient offense. So you'd like to see him, you'd like to see Preston paired with a quarterback who's going to sort of go through progressions and read the field a little more after the snap. But also you would like to see him get schemed some of those opportunities that Parker is getting. You know, last year he did have some of those opportunities to be featured in the passing offense. You know, they changed offensive coordinators to Chan Gailey this year. And that component of Williams' volume, you know, he was essentially even with Parker when he was healthy last year in terms of targets. That component has really disappeared. So I don't feel confident at all about his volume going forward as long as Fitzpatrick is the quarterback and Gailey is the coordinator. Even if they switch at quarterback, again, I don't see the offense really designed to go to Preston very often. So I think it's more of a hold and see in dynasty, and not too optimistic for what he's going to do in 2020.
All right. Well, that wraps up our podcast for today. Just running through some trends and deciding who we're buying and selling and where we're at. Was there any other final notes that you had for us?
No, man, I think it was fun. I think it'll be interesting to see how teams adapt and move forward now that they should be hitting their stride a bit more and people are starting to figure out who's doing what in 2020. Hopefully these COVID pop-ups that we've had are kept under control and we continue to have, you know, the majority yes. of the NFL games played. We need positive things these days, my friend.
Yes, we do. That is the truth. Yes. Yeah. Can't wait. Always fun recording with you. And we are the Fantasy Football Astronauts. We are excited to continue to bring you the best fantasy podcast in the galaxy. And we are blasting off again.